John, tag, you're supposed to run after me after I touch you. You can't. That's not how tag works, the way you're playing.
It's a regional thing. I'm playing Midwestern rules.
Oh, I should have known that. Okay, yeah. My bad. Yeah. Sorry.
Hey, speaking of, Dave, you know, with Memorial Day coming up,
I'm guessing you're
probably getting ready for plenty of fun days in the sun.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I right?
First, I have to learn these rules for tag. But, yes, everyone knows this, John. Everyone knows that time in the sun is best enjoyed with a pair of shades that you don't have to baby.
Oh, yeah.
Knockaround is the original affordable sunglasses company, and they've got just what you need for Memorial Day weekend, MDW, for those of us who celebrate all year, and all the way through summertime.
They do. And with over 20 different frame styles, there's something for the whole family, including tons for kids.
So, whether you're looking to rock a pair of red, white, and blue shades for the big weekend, or just to restock your collection before summer gets here, Knockaround has you covered.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you know that all their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyeballs?
Oh, man. And I've put copper tone just right on the old ojos, and it burns. It is burning still to this day.
Yeah, well, you keep putting it on.
Well, it's a habit. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
You know, Dave, where I come from, Memorial Day weekend means it's race day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
oh,
there's no more important place to have some shades than outside at the track.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard me say that once, you've heard me say that a million
it's
times.
It's on your front yard.
I think I might actually just buy a pair of Knockarounds in that color.
Yeah.
Like in the color of each car, actually.
Yeah.
And it's switching back and forth based on who's leading the race.
Love that. That's one of the best ideas you've ever had.
So listen, Dadville fans, take that idea and run with it. Also, don't be the one squinting through family beach days or trips to the park. Go to knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com.
I just said that.
Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
James Bay.
John, Dave. Hey, you know how some people use the word literally when they really should be saying virtually?
Don't get me started.
Now listen, here's an example of using it the correct way. I take AG1 by Athletic Greens literally every day.
Me too, Dave.
Yeah.
You know what? It makes me feel virtually great.
Oh, wow.
Starting every day with AG1 makes it easy to ensure I'm getting all the nutrients I need. And you know I need a lot of nutrients.
John, look at your biceps. Why take a bunch of different things when you can just mix one scoop of powder and water once a day?
That's a great question. AG1 was designed with ease in mind so that you can live healthier and better without having to do a lot of stuff.
It's the healthiest thing you can do in under a minute.
AG1 gives you increased energy and mood support, making it easy to live your best life.
If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens, AG as we call it in the, with the kids, is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. How many fun places can you go, John?
You can go to 5. You can go to 3, but go to 2 of them twice.
This is
gonna
get
the math.
No, keep going. Okay. Or you can just go one place how many times?
5 times.
That's right, with your first purchase. 5 free travel packs with your first purchase.
So go to athleticgreens.com/dadville.
That's athleticgreens.com/dadville. Check it out. So you're coming in hot. You are in the studio. Is this day, I'm assuming day 3?
Yes, indeed. This is day 3.
And you're with GS himself, another Nashvillean.
We've got a Nashvillean in the house. And
my old neighbor, actually.
Oh, sweet. Oh, there you go. And a fellow father.
He's an FF.
That's right.
A double F.
Actually, did we just start a band? Ooh. A 3-piece called Fellow Father?
It's great. I love it. It's a great. Yeah.
Done.
I'll do aux perk.
I'm doing drums.
It's only aux perk, actually.
So how is it going, by the way?
It's going really well. I get more and more nervous about kind of going into the studio, which is quite a thing to sort of confess, because I don't think I'm supposed to come across like that or say that out loud. But, well, until recently, when I started to sort of just sort of say to myself, just chase down what you absolutely love. And I think I've been, we're all guilty of getting lost in trying to make something that we just hope everyone else will really be into. And that's a silly way to go. That's one of my most naive sort of traits. And I've been, so actually to be really present about my sort of answer, I've been shaking that off and I've been having a great time.
Oh, that's good. Good. That's amazing.
You know, my new North Star when it comes to like creating stuff is I kind of want to, I'm like, just write a song that your friends, like your musician friends would love. Like when they listen to it, they'll be like, oh, that's cool, dude. And that if there's any sort of outside North Star, that's my North Star. Because you can't write to like, well, what do I think my fans will like?
Actually, that's perfect. And on that same sort of point, this is the first time I've had my band that I play with live in the studio.
Oh, wow.
Which is so much fun to do. And they are ultimately, I mean, they're completely my friends because we live together so much of the year on tour. I mean, you know, especially Tom on bass, I've known him since I was three. So these are my tight buds. And I think that moment when you smile together in the studio, which is literally 3 days old to me, this feeling, because something happened that was cool or someone did something or everyone locked in, like exactly what you're saying, John, basically, like that feeling. I feel like, I'm doing it for my friends. Okay, cool.
And then anything that happens outside of that is icing on the cake, because it's like the song has already given you all that you need.
100%.
You know?
God, listen to how wise you just sounded, John. That was like a 100%. Sage advice.
Yeah, man. That's great.
That's all I've got for the whole interview. I'm out for the
guys, rest of it. We're flying right now, and we got to slow it down because we got to do a formal intro here because everybody, they're engaged, they're fascinated, but we haven't even formally introduced James Bay, who is our guest today, who is officially one of my favorite people on the planet, and I mean that, and John's heard me say that, and I mean that.
That is true. Dave has raved about
I've
you.
Raved. I
to the point
rave.
Where it's almost like become a thing with me and you, James. I'm sorry, like I already have a beef with you.
There's a beef.
John
is a fellow father in this band.
our band is already starting in a fight.
We're having our first stupid match. Rumors is on the way.
We're going to be successful because there's already tension.
Rumors is on the way. We're going to make some great art, guys. Okay, so James, so what we do, we intro with what we call the brag sheet. And this is like just you and your myriad of accomplishments. So buckle up because this is James Bay. This is your life. Okay, here we go. First single, Hold Back the River, was certified platinum before his debut album came out. James has toured with Hoja, Taylor Swift, T-Swizz, who just sold a nice little 210,000 tickets this weekend in Nashville, whatever to that. Three nights at Bridgestone, or I'm sorry, at Nissan Stadium, sold out every night. Rolling Stones, Lumineers, and Ed Sheeran. His debut album, Chaos in the Calm, sold over 2 million copies, which is a lot more than Taylor played for this weekend. Take that, Taylor. He recorded a cover of the Beatles song, Hey Bulldog, which I really, really want to hear that, by the way. That was a fun fact for me because I was like, you know, my love for the Beatles and for you. So there it is. In 2017, released Epiphone Signature. This is cool. 1966 Century Outfit, an accurate recreation of his customized 66 Epiphone Century. That's cool, man. That's that's one of those, like, I love that. Okay. Now, and here we go with the award. So here's one of my favorite things too. And by the way, in the studio, as we said, making new record, currently as we speak, that just everybody is just clamoring over. Okay. Awards. 2015 Brit Awards Critics Choice, 2015 GQ Breakthrough Solo Artist Award, 2015 Q Awards Best New Act, 2016 Brit Award for Best British Male Solo Artist, 2016 Echo Music Prize for Best International Newcomers, 2016, this one's really cool, Ivor Novello Award for Most Form Work for Hold Back the River, 2016 Q Award for Best Solo Artist, 2016 nominated for 3 Grammy Awards, Best New Artist, Best Rock Album, and Best Rock Song. And just is killing the game. I got to see James play a couple times now at the Ryman. What was that, 4 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. Just pre-pandemic.
Yeah, and then at Bridgestone with the Lumineers, 6 months ago or so.
Then you just played Royal Albert Hall.
Would you talk about that for a second? Let me say this quickly. I got to go. We were there in December for Christmas and New Year's. And we got to go to one of the Christmas shows there. And you know, like, I've been in a lot of venues, right? And gorgeous venues. Mm. That venue literally took my breath away.
It's unreal.
Stunning.
It's unreal.
People listening should look up, like, Google Royal Albert Hall.
Right? Oh, my
it's,
gosh. Yeah.
It's one
oh
of those places gosh. Where, like, even just the tiny little pictures on an image yeah, search it's like, incredible. Wow.
It's two things. One I sort of knew from a while back, and one I found out just the other night when we were there. The one I found out when we were there is that it's such a structurally sound thing that they dropped the roof on and never, like, bolted it or nailed it or glued it or whatever.
What?
It just sits on the top. And that's, like, really? We're going, it's a Victorian building. Because the other fact that's quite fun, I guess, is that Queen Victoria was so in love with Prince Albert, her hubby, that she built it for him. She just said, I love you and I want you to have this. That's the story I know. I mean, I'm going out international on an international podcast. So fingers crossed it's true, you know. But that is what I was told even at school. So and I've been actually going to that. I grew up about hour and a half from London, so there have been a really sort of well, there's been a lot of occasions in my kind of early years and in my teens when we'd get to go to the Royal Albert Hall to see all kinds of different things. There was a whole Cirque du Soleil goes and does an amazing sort of run every other year there. They do these nights where various orchestras come and sit and play. But they'll show Jaws or they'll show Harry Potter and the orchestra.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
So cool.
So that's why I got to see Clapton there with my dad. My dad in 1969 was at the Royal Albert Hall when Cream did their final concert.
Oh my God.
But there was something sort of full circle about that was wild. And I remember actually that the highest seats and I think the cheapest seats in the house are referred to as the gods. They're in the very top. You stand, you don't even sit. It's just, there's an area around the top that you can stand at. It's the cheapest ticket. And when I was a student, I went to see Feist there, standing up in the gods in, like I say, so typically the worst seat in the house. And it was to this day, one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. She was unbelievable. Wow. So it's always been a special venue that I've wanted to go and play at. And, this time that I got to go and play at the other night, my own headline show, it was, a lot of my sort of closest friends and I think most of my family were there, which made it 1,000 times more terrifying. My wife, my wife Lucy had not, because we had a baby and, you know, brilliant segue, of course, into fatherhood and all of that. But because we had a baby in kind of in the pandemic, really, you know, 2021, still pandemic times. She hadn't seen me play live since 2019. So this is the first time she'd seen me live.
What?
In 4 years.
Holy
cow.
It
was kind of a huge night on all kind of levels. It was our first successful babysitter night. We had a great time.
So how do you do in those moments when it's like, this is a big moment. This is like the venue's special. Everybody's there. This is like, you know, how do you do in those moments? Are you like, yeah, I'm going to get out there and freaking rock this? Or is it?
I typically am very excited about those kind of moments. It's not to say there isn't nerves. There's an amount of nerves that I kind of embrace and it's healthy and I'm into
it.
But it's mainly excitement. All of that said, on this night, it was a very new thing for me to carry all of that to the stage and the feeling of, I really hope Ada's sleeping sound at home and, like, you know, she's you know, she hasn't woken up and the babysitter's chill because she's an incredible sleeper. You know, shout out to Ada. I'm sure she'll be listening in 18 months. But yeah, I was
which is kind of good. It kind of like keeps the moment that you're in sort of in check a little bit.
100%. Yeah, it really did. It was actually, you're absolutely right. It really sort of brought me down to earth. Because it kind of, I had to keep saying to myself, yeah, but focus on the job. You know, you've got to go to work tonight, and it's a really exciting one. So, it was, it was a new angle on something I've experienced a lot before. It was new because, we've never had a baby at home in that sort of situation before. Uh-huh. And it was also new because it was my first time playing, headlining the Royal Albert Hall. It was wild.
You know, what's always really fun for me on those nights too, when you play your hometown now, living in London. I don't know how to explain it. It's like I always just feel a little like elevated, like, you know, because you drive back home or what, and you're like, I literally just played like a few miles away in this you know in this venue that's legendary, and here I am sleeping just a few miles away in the same city. That's like, those are the moments in my career, like, you know, the Ryman here playing there, you know. I just go to bed and I'm like, this is just cool. It's just really cool. Like, I'm thankful for my life.
completely. That reality. And my big kick getting to do this for the time that I've been able to do this now, touring and playing shows and being able to travel. The big kick I really got out of it was getting away from home and being in Tempe, Arizona, and someone in a quiet moment in the middle of the crowd, like there's like 3,000 people, and this girl shouts, I drove 8 hours to see you. And my mind was blown. But actually, yeah, Dave, like that's become a thing more recently, especially with a family and being even more maybe of like a homebird in so many ways. And as a kid, I didn't like leaving my little hometown. So music really inspired me to kind of get out and even have a desire to travel, let alone have the sort of fortunate opportunity to be able to go and do it. And I've gone a little bit full circle, and I love to be local now, as well as adventure and explore and sort of travel. But like you're saying, like when any venue is like kind of on your doorstep, it's such a strange reality to live.
Exactly. And especially that one. I mean, again, like, you know, when we went there, I was so smitten by it that I got online, actually, because, you know, the big thing a lot of people do, which I came to find out, is you like eat there and then you walk in. So they have all these restaurants. It's genius. They have restaurants that's sort of inside of the venue that sort of circle the venue.
Yeah.
And, you know, you eat and then you go in and watch the show. And I got on Wikipedia while we're eating and I already had goosebumps. But then, like, the people that have played, I mean, it's the who's who of you know, international, you know, sort of stars. And, you know, you think about it's incredible.
It really has always been that. And it's obviously the whole royal angle is definitely fun.
Yes. Yes.
You know, historically, me and Lucy got to see, we'll surely move on from the Royal Albert Hall, much as we love it. But like last thing, we got to see one of the James Bond. This was such a British moment. We got to see a James Bond premiere there. Prince William and Kate were there, and like there's a whole red carpet situation.
That's amazing.
It was wild. It was absolutely wild, and all the cast were there, and it was like just this massive night. Any escape from that place is crazy. You know what? Actually, small side note. 10 days before I did my show, I was really fortunate to be invited to go and play a charity night there, where I had to do like 4 songs, 20 minutes, solo acoustic, which is completely terrifying on the one hand.
But it gave
me a little dry run before my own show. And even on like a charity night with a host of different artists can be looked at in various different ways. Is it going to sell out is the most important thing, because they're trying to, you know, make money for a good cause. And it was packed, and it was this incredible occasion all the same, because it's the Royal Albert Hall. Who isn't going to go? That was the energy, and it was unbelievable.
That's amazing.
Okay, so back in the day, what was the town that you grew up in? What was it called?
It's a tiny little town called Hitchin.
Hitchin.
Yeah.
Okay. So in Hitchin, what was the upbringing like? What was the house like? What was the relationship with your parents like, and all that?
It was Hitchin is a very safe. My experience of Hitchin growing up as a kid was a very safe, kind of slow, like working class to middle class town. Essentially, it's like on what's called the commuter belt, which is a sort of ring of towns around London. They're like the first towns outside of London, or they're kind of the second towns. They're a bit further out. People who ultimately like work in London but cannot afford to live there will go and live in somewhere like Hitchin, like my dad did.
Mm-hmm. So did you go that far out?
No, this is the thing. You'd have to get a couple trains into the first tube stop.
Okay.
That's why it's not London. So I grew up there, and like again, like there was a sort of safe nature to it. It was you know, I would be out on my bike at night till sort of 7 or 8 when I was like 12 years old on like a summer night. There was no cell phone. I was that last generation before cell phones was everywhere. And my mum didn't know where I was, and I was just rolling around as the sun was going down. It was a really, I have vivid, beautiful memories of, you know, you could sort of ride a few streets away, and there was like fields and sort of kind of farmland. It was pretty chill.
This sounds like it's like, I'm from Indiana. This sounds like the Indiana of the UK. Well, it sounds exactly like my upbringing.
Just absolutely minute in comparison. But it was, there was one venue, there was a bunch of pubs and bars, and there was people's living rooms, and those were the like gig opportunities.
Wow.
Which was fun. And yeah, my experience, like as a little kid, my dad worked in London. I hated going into London. I didn't like the busy rush of it all. I was just like a slow pace kind of guy.
Wow.
So your dad was commuting back and forth to London every single day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was that.
How
was
long all. Is that commute for him?
He was something called a wine merchant, which is like a fancy name for a guy who sells booze. No disrespect.
That's right. That's right. I remember reading this. Your dad was a wine merchant, and then what did your mom do?
My mom did a couple different things. When we were in school, she was working in like clothes shops in like retail. But before that, she was a fashion illustrator, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
She worked in a time doing that, where it was before. Nowadays, magazines are all photos. I mean, nowadays we have the internet and we barely have magazines. But back in the day, when a magazine wanted to like present next season style, they didn't necessarily have photos of it. So they would use people who would draw them. And my mom would draw that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
And it would go in the back of a magazine in the late pages in a kind of like, this is what's coming sort of thing. So she would draw that kind of, so she's artistic in her own way. They both love music, and they both had like younger years in London. And then when they started to sort of have a family, they moved out. And my dad, yeah, because he was, so his commute was in the car, and it was easily like, at the worst, it would be like hour and a half to 2 hours in, hour and a half to 2 hours out.
Oh my gosh.
Which in our tiny little country where you can sort of get everywhere pretty quick, that was a lot of waiting around. And yeah, equally, he's of a generation where he could drive around London, doesn't need a map, knows exactly where he's going.
Yeah,
he's the guy. But anyway,
where are they each from?
My dad is from near to Hitchin. He's like, he's from the county is called Hertfordshire. Yeah, so he's from around there. And my mum is like from nearer Manchester, but she was like 19 when she moved down to London. She's never really been back. She's essentially from up north.
I'm just picturing you guys like around the dinner table, and your mom has like some sketches because she's got an idea for a little like scarf, and then your dad's holding like a bottle of wine, and you're all speaking British, and it's just, I take back what I said about Indiana. It's nothing like Indiana.
it's a regal version of Indiana.
Yeah, there's a lot of corks rolling around. There's bottles.
Exactly.
That was their thing, and it was a really chill experience as a kid. And I remember that part of it really like fondly. But like, as I fell in love with music more and more, and I'd been in love with music as a little kid, and then I picked up a guitar when I was 11. And then the idea of playing in front of people became more exciting and alluring. And eventually I was like, again, this is a unique little generation that I was, where DVDs were something and they meant something. And VHS, of course, as well. And I had concert, like albums, live albums on DVD, as well as on CDs and on cassettes. The idea that I wanted to do and be the things that I was watching and hearing was all well and good, but I couldn't do it in this little town. I'd have to leave eventually. And that's sort of what inspired me to find my way out.
What was like the one that you remember? Like, I remember seeing a VHS tape of Billy Joel.
Wow.
Like, that was like a moment. I was like 4 or 5 years old. And he was wearing a sports jacket, like a blazer, but a t-shirt underneath. And I remember for me, I was like, what?
Like, is this Don Johnson or Billy Joel?
Straddling two generations right now and playing the piano.
Your mom would have been so proud, James. She'd have been like, look at this fashionista.
100%. She would have loved it.
Mick Jagger?
There was a few different ones. One I remember, because it kind of crossed platforms, is that my dad had the sort of Woodstock album on like a 4-disc vinyl.
Oh, wow.
And I got the DVD pretty early on. But the big one was The Last Waltz. The Last Waltz with the band and like the Martin Scorsese movie. Like that, I remember we discovered that, me and my brother, he's only a bit older than me. He's 18 months older than me. So we grew up very close as kids. It was easy to have the same circles of friends and stuff and fall in love with the same stuff, music, skateboarding, whatever it may have been. And we were on vacation at my parents' friend's place, like in, I think it was Spain or something like that, being sort of typical 13, 14-year-old teenagers, a little bit kind of mopey and uninterested in whatever's going on outside in the sun, everyone's in the pool. There was a bunch of DVDs in this house that my parents' friends owned. And one of them, the box had a Telecaster on the front. It said the words The Last Waltz, and they were in sort of fancy writing. Didn't really know what that meant, but there was a Telecaster on the front. I was guitar obsessed, flipped it over. There's Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, Eric Clapton, these guys that I'd started to find out about through my dad's record collection. And I put it on, and that was it. We watched it, and it was every single thing to us. It was just the best. And to this day, it wasn't long after that that I met Lucy, who's now my wife. She was a good friend of ours as kids. We're all from the same town. But to this day, we can recite The Last Waltz word for word and note for note.
Wow. Wow.
It was the big inspiration. There's loads of Stone stuff when you say Mick Jagger and all that stuff. Yeah. There's so many. Because my dad, you know, he was in London as a sort of late teens, early 20s guy when all those bands were like, you could see them either for free or like for a couple of quid, like when they were in their earliest iterations. And as they became massive, he was in London. He's about the same age as those guys. He's a little bit younger. So he had all of that.
He was there for that.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, like
he saw the Beatles and everything.
Yeah, yeah. He saw. Yeah. I remember. There's a famous. There's two famous Rolling Stones live. There's like they're in Hyde Park. It's just a famous '60s sort of show of theirs. And then there's one at Nebworth where they. I can't remember which one of those shows. Brian Jones had died, and it's a famous one because they let out a load of white butterflies, and Mick is wearing all white, and my dad was in the audience at that. You know, at that show. So he's seen some cool stuff.
John, sorry, I ran over here to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
I had to know this immediately. Do you like cashews, gummy bears, or olives?
Oh, mixed together?
Yeah.
No, probably not. No. But individually?
Yeah.
Yes, I love all of them.
Okay, okay. What about popcorn, saltwater taffy, or trail mix? Sesame sticks, dried fruit, or chocolate-covered espresso bean? I call them beans because I've already eaten them, but they're beans in the present tense.
Okay, I feel like you're just toying with me because I literally love all these things that you're mentioning.
Well, John, did you know you can get all those things, all of them, in one place?
No, no.
I'm going to tell you where. Nuts.com. It
what?
Has it all. Yes, yes. Appropriately
you better
titled.
Believe that I know all about Nuts.com.
Yeah.
Nuts.com is your one-stop shop for freshly roasted nuts, dried fruit, sweets, pantry staples, specialty flowers, and more.
Wow. Their wide selection means there's something for everyone.
That's true, Dave. In fact, you know how I like candy corn.
Do I?
I don't tell a lot of people
that.
I know.
I feel special.
Well, not only does Nuts.com have regular candy corn, it also has gummy candy corn.
What?
And let me tell you something.
What?
You have not lived until you've tried the gummy candy corn.
Well, then call me dead because it is time for some GCC. That's so good, John. And it's not even Halloween. We don't deserve this kind of love.
I know.
Right now, Nuts.com is offering new customers a free gift with purchase and free shipping on orders of $29 or more at Nuts.com/Advil.
That's nuts. So go check out all the delicious options at Nuts.com/Advil. You'll receive a free gift and free shipping when you spend more than $29. That's Nuts.com/Advil.
Dave.
Jenna.
You know, that was great.
I like him.
You know, I'm not too sure what my kids are going to get me for Father's Day.
Yep.
But I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I know what I get them every single day of the year.
Damn, John.
Children's vitamins that aren't filled with sugar, chemicals, and other gummy junk.
Which gummy
junk?
It's like
a gift to them every day.
In high school. I don't know if you ever saw this. John, you must be talking about Hiya.
I am.
And I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
My kids love them, and they love the stickers they got with the first order to decorate the bottle.
Oh, yeah. I loved it, too.
Yeah.
Dave, did you know that Hiya was formulated with the help of nutritional experts?
Ooh.
And is pediatrician approved?
Watch out.
Yep. It's a superpower chewable vitamin that tastes great, even for picky eaters, and is made with zero sugar. I'll say it again. Zero sugar.
Thank you for that. Hiya fills in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with the yummy taste they love.
It's non-GMO, vegan, and allergy-free, containing no dairy, gelatin, or nuts.
Get them out of here. Hiya is designed for kids of all ages and sent straight to your door. Means they don't throw it in the yard?
No,
won't leave it in a neighbor's mailbox?
Nope.
And then they just flat out won't deliver it.
Right.
They're going to do it.
They're going to deliver it straight. You probably won't even have to leave your house. Your feet are in your house. Hands just go right outside.
Bring it in.
And best of all, we've worked out a special deal with Hiya for the best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off, 50 percentage sign, off your first order.
Dave, how do I claim this deal?
Let me tell you, to claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/Dadville. This deal is not available on their regular website.
That's right. Go to HIYAHEALTH.com/Dadville and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
So it sounds like your dad's like a major music guy. Like when you were starting to play, was there any, I mean, obviously it was an organic just love that you had for music.
Mm.
Were you aware that there's some kind of connection with like, dad loves music, I'm starting to do music?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely. And I'll say that for both my parents, to be honest, as far as like they don't play instruments, they don't sing, they don't perform, but their love for music is a performance in itself. It was always on in the house. The radio was always playing. Right. My mum particularly would turn up the things that she loved. And that's a real nuance, what I'm saying there, but it's important as a kid.
It says like, this is important.
Yeah. When you watch someone like do that. Also my mum, like, you know, always a music lover all her life. I remember her telling me that the Manchester Apollo, which is like a 3000 cap room that I've actually played in a few years ago. She went there as a teenager to see like a 60s package tour. And she was telling me, I said, who did you see? Because she was describing I'd learned by this time as a sort of an 18-year-old, I'd learned about and watched movies about these package tours that like Stax might have done or whoever, Motown.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, who did you see? She couldn't remember who the package tour was like by. But the same bill in the Manchester Apollo in probably 1968 or 9, Ray Charles, Ella Fitzgerald, I think... either Count Basie or Duke Ellington.
Good. Wow.
All nice. On the same night. And I met a guy who saw that tour. He saw him in Leeds. And he just sort of, yeah, he was telling me about it at that same time, late 60s. But yeah, my mum loves live shows as well. So they both so inspired it in us. And they like I say, their love of music was a bit of a performance in itself. Like if something was going on TV, there was some sort of live amateur situation and someone wasn't giving it, then my parents would kind of shout at the TV and say like, go on, mean it, you know, and if if someone was giving it great on a show on TV or on the radio, then
yeah,
they would sort of turn it up and go, listen to that. Isn't that
unbelievable?
Yeah,
that,
right.
You said that so beautifully because I would say, I've never heard that said like that, James, like their love of it was sort of its own performance. Cause my dad was the same way. Like he plays a little bit of everything, but just kind of enough to get by. But his love for music for me growing up was really profound. Like the way that he would listen, and we always had music on in the background. He doesn't do anything without having it on. And I think I've never thought of it. That's a really great way to articulate it because I've never known how to say how important that was, but it was almost like he played himself by how much he loved.
Yeah,
and showed me how important it was. So somehow, you know, I wanted to ask is, you know, being from this small town, your parents are these wonderful, you know, people who love music but aren't in music. Mm. How have you transitioned? Because you've had such a successful career and you're having one. I don't know if we talked about the Royal Albert Hall and you just played there, but you just played there. And so, you know, how you've got no, this is always one of my favorite things to ask my friends who've gone on to really do well. But there's not a pedigree for it, right? There's no language. Like, your parents didn't grow up in it. You didn't,
right.
You know, it's not something you got to watch first person.
No.
How have you transitioned into where your career is now that, you know, you're getting recognized, people know you, they love your music, you've gotten a certain amount of fame. How do you navigate that? Like, what is that like?
It's been at times a bit of a roller coaster, and then in more recent times, something that I've reminded myself is of course not the reason for wanting to do it. And what I mean by that is for some people, and definitely for me at a point, it was so overwhelmingly present, the sort of fame part of it, that it was hard to sort of operate day to day without taking it into consideration. And I recognize and appreciate that these sorts of things for anybody who kind of gets close, they'll come in sort of peaks and troughs. They'll happen more, they'll happen less. And, you know, if we go to our sort of Taylor Swift's and Ed Sheeran's, then of course it consumes their experience, you know, with respect. I see that that's essentially sort of what's going on. But for me, yeah, and my journey with that kind of stuff, it's growing up. I mean, I was 22. So yeah, well, let's, you know, broadly speaking, say early 20s, all that stuff is starting to happen to me and I'm being recognized in the supermarket or in the street or whatever. I still got some, at that age, I've definitely still got some growing and some sort of developing to do emotionally. I'm 32 now, and so much of the anxieties and excitements that come with that unique experience have kind of learned to rest sort of within me. So to sort of answer your question, in short, I've naturally sort of become better at like appreciating it's just a part and a piece of the whole thing, and to always go back to and sort of fall back to the kind of journey and the quest of making songs and music and doing something inspired, feeling inspired by what I'm trying to do. That's the thing to chase and stay focused on. Whatever happens with it and in response to it and as a result of it.
How has it informed like your marriage and being a dad now?
Yeah, it's I mean, Lucy has been on that journey and around it now with me for a while. And of course, she knew me a lot before I got anywhere near, you know, being recognized by record labels, let alone sort of people in the street. So if anybody keeps my feet cemented to the ground.
And
has learned to sort of roll with the punches of it with me. It's Lucy. Ada is still super young and she loves to jam. She loves to play. She loves to sort of hit stuff while I strum a guitar, and maybe she'll hit the guitar and stuff like that. But she doesn't obviously know much about it beyond that. But it's fun and wonderful and lovely how it's reset me slightly, because it can be easy to. Truth is, of course, in some way, we're all guilty of chasing the affection we receive from people when we make something that they respond to. And if I was ever guilty of doing that more than I should be or at all, then family life, this new young family life that we're living in, that I'm living, has done it's reset me in this sort of wonderful way.
And
it's sort of reset a beautiful balance.
Well, for what it's worth, and I really want to say this, I think you are one of the most kind, hospitable people that I know that has had success. So
I
think you deal with it incredibly well, just to encourage you.
Thanks, man. Thank you. It's a roller coaster, of course, but I really appreciate that.
You know, as you're growing up and starting to write songs and starting to become like that music guy and watching, you know, these DVDs and all that, what was your expectation of it? Were you like, was your goal as you're growing up to make music, or were you like, I want to make music and play to stadiums and get famous? And then when it happened, were you like, what was your did it feel the way you thought it would feel? What sort of things did it
it's a good
surprise
question.
You about?
There's a few different kind of answers in a way, because in reality, my journey growing up with music was like sideman. My brother was the lead singer of any band we were in. I was on the side playing guitar. We wrote the songs typically most of the time. And then Tom, who I think I mentioned earlier, who plays bass in my band today, who I've known since I was 3 years old, he's always been one of my closest best friends. Yeah, he and I, we were always like, we were writing and my brother Alex, we were writing. But I was never the main focus in a group or a thing that we were doing. But I was a big part of the kind of piecing. I was a big part of the band practice. I wasn't just being sort of directed in there. So the reality was I was on the side of the stage for most of it until I sort of found the kind of courage and curiosity to go very solo, ultimately. Acoustic guitar, and I was suddenly sort of falling in love with like Carole King and James Taylor and sort of Joni Mitchell. All those kinds of artists, and the kind of present day versions, ultimately, like, you know, your Adele's and early years Adele, early years like Ray LaMontagne, people like that. When I kind of got into that sound, I started to sort of develop a confidence, and I was playing in pubs in my hometown, but I was getting these reactions I was doing it solo. We got fun reactions as a band with my brother fronting the thing, and then I was suddenly sort of experiencing getting a reaction locally. And it inspired.
And was that type of thing where, like, you would have a line in the second verse, and then after the show, people would be like, "Hey, you should sing some more. Let's give you a whole song next time."
Yeah, there was that. That's pretty much exactly one of the things that happened. And I just followed my own curiosity and sort of journey and line through influences that weren't necessarily influences of our band or bands. They were influences of mine and songs I was trying to write on my own. So deep inside, there was suddenly through artists like Springsteen or, you know, just big acts. I remember Kings of Leon at the time, they'd gone from super cool kind of indie band, small venue to like huge. I was very much like at school when everybody heard Sex on Fire and Use Somebody and it all went enormous for them.
Yeah.
And like watching those sort of rises. Yeah. I ran off with my wildest dreams suddenly and was like, whoa, what if, you know, what could that be like? And then, so like cut from 18 years old playing in a pub to 24 years old and we were at Glastonbury on the main stage. And there was 85,000 people singing Hold Back the River. And it was a lot to stomach. It was a lot. It was wild. And but I don't regret any of it, obviously.
I mean, 10 minutes before that, you were the side guy who like, well, I just kind of run the rehearsals.
Right.
You know.
That's like always one of my favorite things to watch is when, it's so hard when you get to be our age and you like, you've been in the biz and you know the landscape really well and you go see the band and like, you know, because somebody's like, hey, come check out this band, I'm managing them, we're thinking about signing them, and you immediately go, oh gosh, the guitar player's a star. or you just kind of watch the band for like 10 minutes, you're like, yeah, I can already see where this is going to go. Like, the bass player is, you know what I mean? Where you just kind of like, dude, your piano player's got a better voice than you do. I love you, but he needs to be singing.
That's why I've heard sort of stories like that. And I guess it's interesting. I wouldn't have, maybe one of the reasons I was on the side of the outfit for so much of it is that to this day, I don't know that I'd be able to see that in that way.
Yeah.
Which is what it is, but like, I know what you mean. I know those people exist and they're very good at doing that. And it's important to have them. I think I've always liked working as a team. I've ended up as a solo artist, but you know, my band aren't just the hired hands. They are my friends. You know, I really embrace the way that we live together for a huge part of the year. And like I was saying earlier, like having them in the studio, it's the first time I brought them in the studio and it's just, it's a beautiful thing. And it's the teamwork is a big, exciting part of the experience for me.
Dave!
Nice. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave, question for you.
Okay.
Would you believe if I told you that I am a parent of small children who actually wakes up refreshed every morning, ready to attack the day and fulfill my duty as a songbird to the masses?
I would, but only if you told me that you use the Hatch Rest, my friend. Mm-hmm. The Hatch Rest has been working beautifully for my kids for years.
That's right. Yeah. The new and improved second generation Hatch Rest makes sleep better and more magical for your entire family.
Good gracious.
The all-in-one Hatch Rest is a smart sleep device with a sound machine and nightlight that grows with your kids.
John, it really is amazing how the Hatch Rest helps my kids go to sleep. For us, it's been the sound cues feature.
Oh, yeah.
The time for bed pairing and time to rise signal lets kids know when it's time to wind down at night and then when it's time to get out of bed in the morning.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Right now, Hatch is offering our listeners up to 15% off your purchase of a Hatch Rest and free shipping at hatch.co/dadville.
And give and give. So if you're ready for improved sleep for your kids and yourself, go to hatch.co/dadville to get up to 15% off and free shipping.
That's hatch.co/dadville.
Hello, Dave. Wow.
Okay, yours was better than mine. Johnny.
Thanks.
Are you loving this warmer weather? Summer is just around the corner.
Dave, I am so glad that you brought that up because the weather has been so great. Mm. I'm playing tennis, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sitting outside on the porch in my tennis shoes, going for walks in different shoes. I don't walk in tennis shoes. Yeah, I mean, it's so nice. And honestly, I don't really want to be spending too much time in the kitchen making meals because there's so many other
John, that's where Factor comes in. You can fuel up with Factor's no prep, no mess meals, so you can spend more time outside.
Okay,
It sounds good, but Dave, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Can I meet my wellness goals in time for summer with Factor?
I hope you've got goals and then more goals, John, because we'd call you Cristiano Ronaldo. Soccer joke.
Heyo.
And guess what? And then some, John. It's going to be just fine. Factor has chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. And Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Dave, that sounds so awesome. You've talked me into it. I'm ready.
Wow, that was easy.
I'm ready to kickstart my routine with 35 different
Good
meals.
Gracious.
And more than 60 add-ons to choose from,
Goodness
Dave. Did you know
gracious.
That? I'm educating you now. And these are restaurant quality meals like filet mignon,
Ooh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
Blackened salmon.
Enjoy
you know?
Effortless support for your lifestyle. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced.
Head to factormeals.com/dadville50 and use the code dadville50 to get 50% off. That's 50, 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code DADVILLE50 at factormeals.com/DADVILLE50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
I think it says a lot about an artist if they've had their same kind of band and crew for a long time. I mean, that says a lot about the artist.
Yeah,
I think.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's something about it's great. Loyalty can be great fun.
Quote unquote soundbite from Dadville. Okay, so before we talk kid stuff, which we're gonna get to in a second, this is John and I, this is our favorite question, we revel in this question with our friends who play music. Okay, so can you give us one of each, if you can? If you can't, this is on the spot, like best and worst live music moments that you like, not seeing, but you that happened to you.
Me, brilliant. Yeah. Best live music moment. I suppose the fan in me can't help that. While I'm very proud of all the things I've sort of done with my sort of own shows and all of that, the fan, music fan in me that I'll always be will always jump straight to, like, everything about the day and the build up was unbelievable. But to be announced onto the stage by Mick Jagger with the Rolling Stones and say, like, can we please welcome back to the stage James Bay? And we did Beast of Burden together. And I did not know that.
You came out there and sang it with them.
We did it together. And my folks were in the audience for that show. And my brother was there too. And Lucy was there. And like, oh my goodness me. Like, you know, that experience, you know, it, like I say, and again, it was like 80,000 people. It was a stadium show because it's the Stones. They're not doing anything much smaller. So
yeah,
every nuance of that moment, that 4.5 minutes or whatever. And I just say, in the build up to that and spending time in Mick's dressing room with him and making the plan and even rehearsing it on stage with the band beforehand, I think one of the most intense moments for me was he said to me in the dressing room, and he's very obviously wonderful and lovely. And as I think nobody gets that far without being great fun to hang out with. And he said, and listen, well, two things. One that you guys will love is that I walked into the room and Mick said, like, so I'm thinking this. And he said, let's give it a go. And Chuck Lavelle was there, like, so ready.
At the keyboard. Yeah, ready to rock.
Just in his dress. Mick Jagger's in the dressing room with the cricket on the TV in the corner. The most British thing of all time.
So British.
And Chuck.
So British.
Chuck like this. Who's incredible, Chuck Lavelle. Wow.
A genius. A genius.
I know, so I'm saying like this, and we're in podcast world, so I'm miming just a guy sitting at a piano in the corner of the room.
just waiting.
Like a sort of a, you know, like a beautiful ornament in the corner of the room.
Like, and he's been there, like, for 2.5 hours, just 100%. In case.
And Mick
fingers
just like,
poised.
Mick's
fingers
just like,
always poised.
Yeah, he's just like, go on, Chuck. And like, then we just roll into Beast of Burden. I've never been more proud that I've, like, known the lyrics, because I don't know the lyrics to anything. Anyway, he said, the most intense thing was that he said, this is how it will kind of go, and we sang through it. He did a verse, I did a verse, we do a chorus each, we do a chorus together. And
God,
he said,
are you sitting in that moment? You're like, I am in a room
with
Chuck, who is one of the greatest. He played on Unplugged with Clapton, right?
That's
him, right?
Wild. I mean,
it's genius. And Mick and me in a tiny room, and he is singing. Yeah. 3 feet away from me.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But he said, like, basically, it was as simple as, and if it's going well and everybody's into it, we'll go another few rounds on the chorus at the end. We'll do a few more. And I thought, oh, right, okay. Wow. Like challenge accepted.
Yeah. So
in the moment, live in front of 80,000 people, that he sort of gestured to Chuck and the guys to go again, go around again, go again. Yes. I was like, wow, that feels like a win. That's like one of the best moments of my time.
Me, in that moment, if he said that, I would immediately be like, okay, so I have to enjoy that last chorus because he's not, he's going to cut it short. He's going to be like, this isn't working. Just enjoy every moment of it.
Look back at it.
And talk about out of my comfort zone. It was one of the only times in my life because and maybe I should have spoken up. I wasn't invited to play a guitar. I just came out to sing the handheld mic, like wireless mic. Mm-hmm. And I did my sort of best Mick Jagger impression next to Mick without looking too much like a caricature. And we strutted down the ramp together. We came back together and it was wild.
I am blown away by this story.
It was the greatest moment of all time.
I want to do like two more episodes and just talk about this.
I'm down.
And we don't even have to say anything new. We can just say the same things we've already said.
I could talk about this story for 3 hours straight. But one of the things that I think so much that you just you have to talk about in that moment is, you know, though when you're at that level of success and you share a stage, I don't know that there's anything more powerful in our industry than when somebody at that level, who can do whatever they want. They're the Stones. He goes, it'd be cool to have James come back out and sing the song with us. I'm like, dude, that's, forget about it, man. That is just such a beautiful thing. You know, mm-hmm. that they're not like, hey, it's good to meet you. Thanks for opening. But like once our show
eye contact.
Going, yeah, it's like our show. So like get off side stage. You know, I mean, come on.
Yeah, it was unreal. And all the guys, by the way, you know, Mick, Keith, Ronnie and rest in peace, Charlie, even Charlie, you know, who's notoriously kind of quiet, but not at all. He's the warmest guy in the house. Mm-hmm. Like, he was fantastic and they all were. And Chuck, by the way, and Daryl Jones on bass, I met those guys too. And they were just so wonderful. So that really sort of peaks things in many respects. And that's one half of an answer to one half.
I can't wait for the other.
I guess the other one, all kinds of different sort of disasters that maybe people don't notice, but they flash in my mind, and one comes to mind.
By the way, I think our first record, by the way, of Fellow Fathers is going to be called All Kind of Disasters. That's the name of the album.
Now I'm talking. I remember it might have even been in that Manchester Apollo I was talking about earlier, but it was a real sort of peak album one moment touring-wise where like tickets were kind of selling like very fast and it was all super exciting and we were doing two nights in a venue or three nights in a venue, we had to put more on and all that stuff. It was really cool. And me being me, it's all fun recognizing the songs that people are coming for. It was often Let It Go and Hold Back the River. And it was as they reacted to other songs from the album more in the show. Like that was very exciting. And I wouldn't say I got in over my head, but like one of my great sort of excitements is to build fancy segues and intros and outros. Oh, yeah.
I love where this is going.
Who doesn't love it?
I love where this is going.
Who doesn't love it? Let It Go is obviously a pretty chill experience. And we had a fun intro where I played a few sort of moody licks. There was some sort of synth pads being held and a big woolly kick and some sort of clacky like rims.
Woolly click and clacky ribs. I get that
kind of thing. Loads of reverb everywhere. And Tom, an absolute legend on bass, grown up together, had this super cool bass part that like whoa, 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 whoa. It leapt. It did like a double octave leap. And he used a really fancy pedal for it. And we were deep into touring. We were 18 months into touring that album.
Oh, at least
I was playing with different keys for that song because it can be a bit of a reach in the chorus. These days, I actually managed to do it in the original key, as I usually have, but we were dropping it now and again. And his fancy pedal that made him leap up and down different octaves was set, but we had not communicated the fact that on this night, after 7 nights, say, of doing it in that key, I needed to bring it down. My pipes were a little bit sore.
Yeah.
So the pad's going. I've played a couple licks in this key, 2, 3, and he's so far out. Bless him. He's so far out. Instead of whoop, 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 he's like, whoop, 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 whoop. It's not, and I'm not, to this day, I'm not pointing a finger. I think it was my responsibility to communicate the key we're going to play it in. Sure. But it was just one of those moments that was, you know, to the naked eye, I'm describing to you a little bit of a kind of a sort of a messed up in a show. But it was, so, you know, we'd brought the audience in down the hushed tones and pin drop atmosphere. And it was just that perfect.
You know, the worst of those moments too is it's also like the pedal has a delay that lasts like 6 days.
Exactly.
So you can't just stop. Like, it's like, do you just make, you know.
That said, that you can't just stop. But my everybody, like meerkats, like looks up, spinning heads on, and we're like, what's, who, how? And I didn't know. You know, in the moment, what on earth do you do? And I said, well, stop, everybody, stop, stop, stop. And everybody on my stage, you know, my crew and everyone's like, what on earth is he going to say? What is his, like, mood as he says, stop, stop, everybody, stop, stop the music, stop the music.
Uh-huh.
And it, just to sort of, I'm not looking for any kind of, like, but saving the moment, the best thing I could think to do, and I was so off the cuff, is I said, stop, stop. And he managed to mute his bass sound. And he did ultimate respect to Tom. He knew exactly what had happened and what key he needed to be in. And I said, I took it to the audience. I said, we're trying to do all these fancy intros and be snazzy up here. You're not interested in any of that, are you? And they went, no. And I went, you just want to hear the song. Should we just do the song? And I'm like, in this moment, I'm like thinking, my guys have got to be so ready. And the crowd go, woo, yeah. And I'm thinking, if this works for me, it's hopefully because it's one of the songs they came for. I said, all right, let's go. 2, 3, 4. And we went in and the crowd loved it. And I'm not looking for, but my guys were ready. That's what I need.
You guys are ready. You guys are
ready. It's like people think, you would think that to get up on a stage like that in front of all those people and all that, you got to practice your instrument. You got to be good at your instrument. And you do. But the things that save you in those moments, like that, that's all the hours of being up in front of people and like making mistakes and like, a lot of times to play a song well, you got to know how to make a mistake in the middle of the song and
that's
recover.
Right. That's exactly
it's about recovery.
Right. That's exactly right.
Big
that
time,
is beautifully,
big time, big
beautifully
time.
Said.
Like,
and everybody who left that show probably told all their friends about that moment and how cool it was.
This, you know what, on that, like this became a thing in, it reminds me of one more answer to your question, essentially. It just quickly, like it reminds me of a thing that was happening at the top of 2022. I hadn't toured for a long time because of COVID. And the first thing I did in sort of January, and that's actually how I got COVID for the first time, as you could expect. But I went out and did 2 weeks of solo acoustic in tiny rooms around the UK. Great fun. And a lot of it was to say, for the fans that came, it was to say, I've been working on new music this whole time and I just want to show you these songs so badly. So let's do these intimate things, playing to like 100 people a night. And they're like, they're like at my feet, like right there, like right in front of me sort of thing. Often there was barely like a stage and it was great fun. Truth is, though, like particularly out of practice because of the pandemic, I was messing up now and again on new songs. And John, when you say it's the thing that they take home, every time if I was to sort of mess up, I came clean immediately. Okay, it's a brand new song. I don't know what the next word is. But if you give me 5 minutes, I'll work it out, or 5 seconds. And everyone would laugh and cheer. And it was the kind of thing that became sort of, it was an amazing thing to learn. And it was sort of an endearing thing between me and the audience together. And you can only really learn that playing to a pub full of talking people, a bar full of talking people when you're a kid.
That's right.
And, but just to give you another answer to that question, there was a young dude at my feet, right, during a song. He was right down there, like front and center, ready to see the show. And I hadn't noticed that he was pretty inebriated. I had no idea. And I shut my eyes to be all, you know, moody and emotional for like verse two. And I opened them and there was a space down below. There was vomit spattered everywhere and a girl looking so upset. She was covered in puke.
Oh.
She was looking at me with these eyes that were like, I'm still standing here because I paid for this ticket. I don't want to go anywhere. But what is this? He had been dragged out. He was like this kind of very wasted, supposedly sort of diehard fan who even worked at the place and had just got hammered and they threw him out. And that was...
What did she do? Did she like power through or...
She ultimately powered through. Someone muscled through during the next song to do a little mop job sort of thing. But like,
That's an intimate show right there.
He took Let It Go very seriously.
Way too serious. It all came out.
So okay, listen, before we release you back to the hounds, you have this wonderful little girl in your life. Mm. This apple of your eye, the best thing that's probably ever happened to you. Mm. Something that we always love asking is like, what is now, you know, you're how old is she now?
She's 19 months old.
Okay, good. Yeah, you've got your sea legs, right? Can you think of something you wish somebody had told you before that you had to learn?
Well, I mean, with all respect to all the lovely, lovely people who sell the lovely, lovely things, like, you know, store up all that sleep. You'll need it later. I don't have it later. It's just not there.
Yeah, that's not even a thing. That's not even how it works. You can't store up sleep.
I just say to them, just, I don't know. I'm sort of like, well, in the nicest possible way, just tell me to sort of get ready for some crazy changes, because like,
yeah,
sleep is just gone. I mean, it's, you know what? And again, shout out to Ada as she's listening. She sleeps like an absolute superhero. And that is all I got to put, because my job involves going away and traveling around. And so, you know, respect and complete credit to Lucy, who's got sleeping like a champion. But anything around sleep that they try and sort of sand off the sharp edges of for you beforehand, like, nah, it's sleep just disappears for a while. So but people can't really tell you to be that prepared. I almost wish people sort of said, it's just going to sort of change things. Maybe some of them, I think my nearest and dearest probably said that. And but we're all in, before our first, we're in such a sort of psychological haze of like, this thing's coming and I don't know what it is and I want it, but I don't know what it, whoa.
Yeah.
There's no preparing for it. Is there, what's the relationship
you
like?
You know what, sorry, that's the thing that no one says is there's no preparing for us. They all just say, it's going to be nuts. You're going to be okay. Yeah. Get a lot of sleep. Nobody says there's no preparing for this.
Well, it's because it's such an intense experience, no matter what it is. So if you've experienced it, you feel like you got to say something. But the truth is, you just put your hands up and you're like, well, we'll see what happens. What's the relationship like with your daughter? And how does it compare to maybe the expectations you had of it?
Well, one of the realities I've found, and it's beautiful and wild and crazy in all its ways, is that for most of the first year, you're sort of dealing with a sort of small animal.
What a great quote.
And you're definitely, I mean, this is my experience. You're definitely not, you're not the lead singer in that group. You're in the side, you're just kind of helping out, sweeping up.
You're dealing with a gnarly little kind of beast that's working out existence of any kind. And it's phenomenal. It's a phenomenal thing to witness as a sort of sentient, like, grown up. And then around 12 months, something starts to happen and it's stunning. And in this time, most people will probably have experienced that mum is the absolute everything and everything to everything of everything to the new baby, whoever it may be. And Lucy is still that to Ada in so many wonderful and important ways. But of course, I exist in Ada's sort of life and reality. And since, like I say, towards the end of that first year, the ways, I'm going to say it like this, it sounds sort of sweet and cliche and mushy, but it's the ways that she looks at me and that she sort of calls for me and that she literally recognizes me and my sort of existence like that. It's in the last six or more months that my relationship with her, when you sort of ask that question, it's become this unbelievable thing. She's saying things. She's not speaking properly, but she's saying all sorts of things. And she's soaking words up like a sort of sponge. And so the relationship develops even more. And negotiations are just on the horizon now. So I'll sort of, let's check back in a couple of months when negotiations are suddenly in full flow. I'll have even more of an answer to your question, but she's a beautiful smiling thing who coming out of, we were on the very, very end of the pandemic. And in that respect, we're sort of lucky because she was so tiny when lockdowns were still a reality and they've not been since she's been a bit more sort of awake to the world. And she's full of sort of social tendencies. And, given she's on her own at the moment without siblings, she wants to run up and say hi to all the kids in the playground and be friends, which is so cool to see. And I hope says something about mine and Lucy's relationship and experience being new, still sort of quite new parents.
Mm. Yeah.
Well said. So I know, listen, you've got to go record more hit songs. So we have two questions we always end this with. And buckle up. They're doozies. I'm not gonna lie to you. Okay. First, what is the one thing you want your sweet daughter to know?
Wow, that's about as massive as the question's come, really, isn't it? Most of the time, really most of the time, when you think it might not be, it's all right. That seems to apply to so many things, and you know, I think I say that, and I'll sort of speak that from a sort of person who grew up all kinds of anxious and still buries all kinds of anxieties underneath the surface that you're even sort of experiencing right now, and I hope she doesn't feel she has to do that as much, because it's okay, you know, talking. And maybe I didn't feel like it was enough kind of talking when I was growing up, so I'd say to her, like, I want her to know that, like, talking is the best thing. It is the best thing to go to deal with any kind of situation, even if it's excitement that you don't know how to contain. And definitely if it's sadness, like, conversation, talking, communication is the, it's kind of the way, to quote The Mandalorian.
This is the way.
There you go.
This is the way.
Okay, last question. What do you want Ada to say at your funeral?
Whoa!
Yep.
He was all right. He was all right.
All right, there's refreshments in the bag, guys.
I think I'd like her to say he was all right. And he tried. You know, he sort of tried. He didn't like do anything by half. Because I try not to do anything by half. He was all right. I'd like her to say he was all right. And he wasn't the soccer player he thought he was. Despite everything ever told you.
Listen, we have to say that at one of those, I remember, maybe you sent this to me or John Green sent this to me. Didn't you have like some incredible assist at one of those celebrity games? Which, by the way, I hear the Rolling Stones story. Obviously, I have envy. I hear Royal Albert Hall. I have envy. When you told me you were playing that stinking celebrity game, with all of those studs, that was the height of my envy for maybe of any of my friends doing anything.
It was unreal. And it was unreal.
Didn't you have it? Was it assist or a goal? Something super.
It was an assist to make it a draw. And then we ended the game a draw so that we could go to a penalty shootout. And then I managed to get a penalty in the goal.
See, there it is. Who was the assist to?
A young dude. He's kind of like a YouTube guy called Young Philly over here. By the way, he's fantastic, and he's a fantastic footballer. And at his funeral, they will say, whatever you saw, he was way better. He didn't get the credit he deserved as a player. Whereas Ada will say at my funeral, you know, he was all right for everything that happened. He was all right, but he was not a player. He was not Alan Shearer.
He was no Shearer.
Are you guys over there able to enjoy Ted Lasso at the same level that we're enjoying it?
I'm not. Yes, is the answer. And I'm only like 6 episodes in. I'm very late to the game. But
so the whole thing?
Of the whole thing, yeah.
Like season 1.
Yeah. So I'm super early days, but I'm...
I wonder that because, I mean, the two of you, I want to say I'm proud of the two of you for not bringing up soccer / football for 58 minutes.
We've done well, especially given Dave's team beat my team the other night. But I've got reasons to be okay with it, that me and Dave.
I love Ted Lasso, and I love watching soccer as well, but I'm not on the level that you guys are at in terms of like fandom, you know what I mean? But and you live over in the UK, and so as I'm watching Ted Lasso, all the little shots of like when he's walking through, I'm like, I want, if this was a show based in Nashville, Dave and I could watch it and be like, oh, I see what they did there. You know, people don't know just out of frame is like a dumpster that always smells terrible or whatever, you know. I always wonder like how you guys are viewing it.
That is happening. That is happening. Yeah, but the sweetness in the heart at the center of the thing, of the program, of the show is like absolutely, it resonates through us in the same way that it resonates to you guys. And it's quite wonderful. And Jason Sudeikis is obviously wonderful. And all the different guys in it, they're kind of nailing it. You know, they're bringing it to the masses in a wonderful way. I'm down for that. But, you know, as aficionados or fans or fanatics or whatever it may be, next time Dave's in town, we'll be able to walk to the Arsenal. We'll be able to walk to the Arsenal from my house. That's where we've ended up. So
nice.
Someday my prince will come. James, you are a legend. Thank you for your time.
This was so great.
And huge best wishes on the new record. I hope it's.
Thanks.
I'm sure. It's
yeah. When are we going to hear this new music?
Well, we're at the very beginning of trying things out, and so it's really boring if I say to you like in the next year, because that's incredibly broad. But
that's where you are. It's kind of the initial sort of entry into the.
Initial entry, and maybe we'll share some sneak peeks. The three of us as a fledgling. There's a fledgling band, fellow fathers.
Hey, and before you go, we have to say you're playing here in the fall.
Yeah, we do. So the very wonderful, lovely Lumineers opened us, invited us back out to open up for them again. We did that, as Dave. We last saw each other last year. Opening for the Lumineers. But so I'm coming back out for about a month with them around the States, and then I'm playing. It's Franklin. Yes. There's a
pilgrimage. You're playing there, and then also, which I mean, this is a great way to end the show.
Oh, yeah.
You're playing with Spring. You're playing with the boss.
I mean,
James.
This is up there for biggest moments of my life. So not only did we get offered to sort of open for Springsteen, but we're third from the top. So it's kind of a cool sort of like
what a year.
We're within distance. It's a wild year.
We're within distance. You can see him. You can see his silhouette.
Might catch a cologne as he goes by.
Sure.
Maybe. Or maybe he'll still be on the stage for money sound check.
Oh, dude. If you get to do a song with him,
we will.
Forget about it. I hope y'all do Beast of Burden, actually. That'd be
Just let him know.
What
you
if
know
he
the
asked
lyrics.
Him? You're like, hey, you do you know do Beast of Burden? I kind of crushed that with the guys, and I feel like we can make great. Hey, thank you so much for being
thank
on.
You.
Much,
thank you. Thank you, guys. It's been a joy. What a dream.